I'm not exactly sure why I chose to share my remarks with you this evening, all the way at the end of the service. But perhaps in part it's because it's here at the end of the service that we recite the Mourner's Kaddish. And when we recite the Mourner's Kaddish, we think of people who are gone from our midst. I can't think of a Yom Kippur without imagining myself sitting next to my father of blessed memory. My father passed away 44 years ago. This summer was his 44th Yahrzeit. And still, amongst my most vivid memories, are sitting next to him in shul, playing with his tallis, looking at the look on his face of intensity and piety, seeing the tear-stained machzor that he held in his hand, listening to him chant with the chazan, seeing how he acted with his friends, for they all sat together every year, just like every Shabbos. And so much of what I became in my life was forged in those early years in the synagogue, sitting next to my pop. But tonight, a verse in the Kol Nidre service that grabbed me is one that I connect not with my father, but my mother. And maybe that's also connected to the Kaddish, because this is the year that I'm in mourning. My first High Holy Days without being able to wish my mother good Yantif. For several days before Chanukah, she passed away. At the age of 93. What a blessing. The verse I connect with my mother comes from that prayer I mentioned earlier, Ki hinei kachomer. We are like clay in the hand of the potter, to be thickened or thinned as God wishes. Thus are we in your hand, fashion us with love. That's how the prayer begins. But I asked you to see if you could guess which one of those images might I focus on tonight? And the answer is, Ki hinei kezchuchit biyad hamezageg. We are as glass in the hands of the glazier. You see, my mother's father was a glazier. And my mother told me more stories about him than anyone else in the family. She was very, very proud of Papa. And one of the things she often spoke of was the fact that because he was a glazier, they had what to eat during the Big Depression. You see, if a window is broken, people can't let the window stay empty. People would cut themselves, the children, God forbid, others could get in, and the cold air would be running through. And so even when times were tough, Papa always made a living. And then she told me a joke. How she was sitting in class one day, and the students behind her were a bit smaller. She was a tall woman, particularly for those days. 5'3". You know, it's true how I remember my mother as being a tall woman. Everybody was described, oh, your mother was just 11. Oh, the tall, beautiful woman, yeah. Maybe 5'4". And she would tell me with a chuckle in her voice how the students behind her would say, Esther, bend down. Just because your father is a glazier doesn't mean that we can see through. So we came to this prayer every year, I think not of my father, but of my mother. And now she spoke of her papa, my Zaidi, who wasn't the glazier when I was growing up, long retired. But why do I want to speak about it particularly this year? And the answer is that I have a membership at the Young Museum. And I went to see the Dale Chihuly glass exhibit. And I stood in awe. How many of you saw that exhibit? Let us show of hands. All right. Not quite a half. Not quite a half. Let's see if the things that I remember are things that you remember. And we can share it with the others who are here. Dale Chihuly is a master of glass, the most famous glass blower and fashioner in the world today. And the exhibit here at the Young Museum was the largest exhibit of his glass anywhere. And he's exhibited in many, many places, including Jerusalem, in the Old City, on the ramparts. And the very first exhibit, the first piece you see, is the one that was the centerpiece in the Jerusalem exhibit decades ago. What's incredible about Dale Chihuly's art in glass is that he uses a very human-made medium to recreate nature. The final piece in the exhibit is a garden. Imagine a garden made of glass. Because he worked the glass in such a way that it looks like flowers and plants growing. It's a garden. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. A garden of glass. All different colors, like flowers are different colors. He has a boat. A boat that was inspired by the floats that Japanese fishermen had used to at the ends of nets to catch fish. And they ultimately floated to the western shore of the United States. And he, growing up in Tacoma, Washington, saw those floats. And out of glass, he blew glass in big circles, the same size of the floats, in marvelous colors. And he filled them in a fishing boat. He took another boat and he filled it with glass that had been tossed into the river and then gathered up by children and adults alike. Some of the pieces were broken, but most of those that were gathered up actually were whole. All different shapes. All natural looking. Magnificent. Stalks of wheat in blue. Beautiful. Beautiful. And it was crowded in the beginning of the opening, and it was crowded at the end. And you could hardly find a place to stand, even in the middle of the exhibit. When people purchased tickets to go to see it, they were given a certain hour to enter. And people lined up, according to their hour, to go in and squeeze between others to see this magnificent exhibit in glass. In one room, the ceiling was covered with glass flowers. And when you looked up, you felt that you were in a flower bed. You were in a garden. An incredible exhibit. But that's not what was most incredible about Dale Chihuly. As a young man, when he first developed his interest in glass, he went where? To Venice. I'm sure that many of you, as I have been to Venice, and we've gone to shops where you could purchase a glass mezuzah, a glass yad as a Torah pointer, and all sorts of beautiful pieces of glass for Judaica. Because in ancient times, many of the glass blowers and makers were Jews. And they've continued that tradition even by non-Jews. So he went to Venice to study how to blow and fashion glass. And he was doing quite well. When all of a sudden, in 1976, at the age of 35, when he was just beginning his career, he was in an automobile accident on a motorcycle. It nearly took his life. But it left him looking like Moshe Dayan. He was blind in one eye. And at the end of the exhibit, we see Dale Shuhili in his factories, in his workshops, with his assistants and his helpers, making the glass that we see, and he has only one eye. You know why that's remarkable? If you have only one eye, you don't have 3D vision. You cannot see depth. You cannot see shape. And can you imagine a glass blower with one eye who creates depth and shape more than anything else? It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. We might have expected that after that accident, when he finally recovered and lost sight in that eye, he would think of something else to do, or he'd give up. He'd give up the dream that he had in his life. But no. He furthered the dream and went further than anyone before him had ever had. And today, so many decades after that accident, Dale Shuhili has produced tens of thousands of pieces of glass. Magnificent. My friends, in one way or another, we have also been wounded. We have had our accidents and our losses, our hurts and our pains. The question is, did we continue to grow? Did we continue to grow? The Talmud likes to tell stories about God with the words Mashal Melech. Once there was a king. And in those stories, the king is always God. But there is one Mashal Melech that's not about a divine king at all, but a human king who suffered a loss. This king had received from his father, received generations back, a magnificent jewel, a phenomenal large diamond. And each time the younger child of the king would rise to the throne, the father would give them this precious diamond. And it lay in a box made of velvet and was just stared at, not even touched. Too precious for that. And this king had inherited the diamond, and he was exceedingly proud of it. It gave him a tremendous sense of joy to know that he possessed it, and one day he would pass it on to the next generation. And he loved that diamond so much that he could not help but break the taboo, and one day reached inside the box and lifted the diamond out of its case. The tips of his fingers, however, felt something rough, not smooth. And as he turned the diamond over, he saw that there was a scratch on the precious jewel. He knew he didn't do it, had no idea how it had happened. But all of a sudden, this precious jewel lost its incredible value to him. It was no longer the perfect gem that he thought it was. And so after sleepless nights, he decided that he was going to have it repaired. And he called the finest jewelers in the land, as kings always do when they run into problems like this. And they all came, and they looked at the diamond under their glass, studied it carefully, and saw that the diamond was etched deeply, the scratch was etched deeply in the side of the diamond. And one by one, they threw up their hands and said to the sovereign, "I cannot repair it." Until one day, one jeweler said, "Give me your diamond and trust it to me, and I shall return it to you perfect." And that jeweler took the diamond, and with his tools, he began to engrave a rose on the side of the diamond that had sustained the scratch. And when he completed the petals of the rose, he turned the scratch into the stem. And alongside the stem, he engraved leaves. And he brought it back to the king. And the king put it back in the box, this time with the scratch facing up. My friends, if you're here for Yom Kippur, you've sustained the scratch and the blow and pain and hurt and loss and turmoil. Perhaps because you've lost someone who was very dear to you and don't know how to get over it. Perhaps because you have done something that you're embarrassed and ashamed of. Perhaps you've lost your self-confidence because of an incident. Perhaps you lost dignity with a job that you once had or a dream that you had given up. You can cry like the king started to do, or you can repair the diamond and make it even more beautiful than it was before. That's what Deo Shehuli did. Even without knowing this verse, Ki hinei kizchochit b'yad hamzageg, as a glass in the hand of a glazier, to be melted or shaped as God wishes, we are in the divine hand and ask that the fragile balance of our life be filled with grace. There is no one next to you who doesn't have their hurt, their pain. The question is, how do we deal with it? Do we face it to improve ourselves? Does losing a loved one make us more understanding of those who have also suffered loss? Does being a husband or a wife without a spouse anymore turn us into people who now reach out to others, who make new friends, who form connections with new companions? Does suffering and pain and loss make us better individuals to understand the suffering of others? A dagadach, to lose a child, who can imagine anything worse than that? But you will see all over this country and all over the world memorial funds that have been set up in the names of children who were snatched from life in their early years, done by their parents. It's repairing the scratch. It doesn't take away the wound, but it makes the world a better place and enables us to overcome what we have lived with. Old age, that no one can stop, well, we certainly don't want it stopped. But how do we deal with our pains and our challenges of getting around? Do we kvetch and complain? Do we bemoan the times when we don't have the strength anymore? Or do we realize that life has given us experiences so that we can be a sage to a younger generation? That with age came wisdom, and we have something to impart. Do we make a rose on the end of the scratch? Or do we allow the fragile glass to break apart? On Yom Kippur, we have a very long time, 25 hours, to think. Let's think not of how hurt we are, not of what we've lost, not of the scratches we've sustained, but how we can make our lives a contribution to those around us. We can ask ourselves that question as Americans. How are we going to deal with this financial crisis? Perhaps what will come out of it is a shrinking of the gap between rich and poor, And he won't continue with the vulgarity of some people earning $8.50 an hour and other people walking away with golden parachutes of $100 and $200 million. Perhaps it'll teach us how to conserve the resources of this planet, getting along on less. Perhaps it will teach us not to be selfish, but to share. Our country, the world, and us as individuals have sustained scratches. We've been in accidents. We've lost the sight in one eye. It doesn't mean we cannot make of our lives a masterpiece. One man who was in San Francisco did just that.